the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler. If you remember the program last week, we discussed getting into retirement shape. People make a lot of resolutions at the beginning of the year to get physically in shape. Some of us do. Others give up after about the third week. But retirement shape was what we discussed as well, what you need to do 5, 10 years, 15 years before you retire, so that when you get ready to retire, everything is in order. And speaking of which, after you retire, today we're going to delve into a situation where you don't want to be in retirement, running out of money. There are a number of reasons that lead to this particular type of outcome. It could be bad investments, bear markets, say. The markets go through their cycles, and if you're relying on them for income, this creates a problem. Poor returns on the investments that you've been making. Improper pensions also will contribute to that, or decisions about your Social Security. Some other possibilities, perhaps you retire too early and you live too long. That's something we're doing nowadays, is longevity. But as you live longer because of better health and taking care of your health, etc., we're having to draw on assets longer than we used to have to do. So the discussion today is not getting into financial shape for retirement. It's how to avoid running out of money once you are in retirement.
You know, John, you just mentioned a number of reasons why seniors find themselves running out of money. And, you know, chief among them is, quite honestly, we are living longer. And although that's good news, you can say, gosh, you know, with medical science, proper dieting, exercise, we're living more productive lives in retirement. But the downside to that is the longer that we live, the longer that we're going to be drawing down on those assets. And the other thing is, you know, you take a look at why people run out of money. It's number one, has to do with investments. Either they didn't have enough, they had poor investments, or quite honestly, they live longer. And the longer you live, the more likely you are going to run into health issues. And imagine if you get either dementia or Alzheimer's, what can happen to your living expenses? And we'll get into a case I've talked about that, you know, unfortunately got finally resolved with a family whose mother had a stroke, had Alzheimer's, and was not prepared for long-term expenses living in a care facility. Unfortunately, she passed away recently. But this is something, John, that many seniors can find themselves in. And they get into a situation where all of a sudden you're in a situation that requires more money. When you have one spouse that goes into a long-term care facility, essentially what you're doing is maintaining two households. And this is something that can really get yourself in a situation where you draw down your assets or go through money much more rapidly. Or another situation that we see quite often is you may be doing okay. Both of you are living and you have two Social Security checks, the husband, and then usually the wife gets about half the husband's. What happens? One spouse passes away, in this case, the husband. Now, the wife has the option of picking the larger Social Security, which is her former husband. But by the same token, she loses her own Social Security. And think of the impact that could have on your living expenses. So the consequence of all of this is, John, the retirement paradigm that we used to see. You retire at age 62. You retire at age 65. That mode is becoming outdated, and boomers, Gen Xers need to rethink that paradigm, because it used to be, well, 62, I can retire, or 65, I can retire. And because people are living longer, that paradigm, you know, back in the days when people retired at age 62 or took their Social Security at age 62, the male life span was in the, you know, mid 60s, late 60s. Now it's in the 80s. So we're definitely talking about an environment that is much, much different, where the average male can live in the mid 80s, and there's a 50% probability at age 65, you may end up living to your 90s. So the probabilities of living longer are there. So that money that you put aside has got to last you over a longer period of time.
Well, the human body is a machine, Jim, and machines, no matter how well you take care of them, do tend to wear down over time. One common occurrence is that as you live longer, obviously, you need more maintenance work, either in the way of surgeries or prescriptions and other things involving the medical industry.
Well, and the cost of medical care is going up. And unfortunately, John, as we've talked on this program, each year, more and more of the cost of taking care of medical is going to be put on you, whether it's increases in Medicare, things that Medicare doesn't cover, increase in your Medigap insurance, certain treatments that you want to have or need that Medicare doesn't cover for, so they're out of pocket. Nonetheless, the most important thing that you are going to make is the decision when to retire, because studies show the later you retire, the greater odds of success and the greater odds of not running out of money. It's plain and simple. If, let's say you're 65, a person that retires 65, a couple can plan on between them 25 years in retirement. You push that retirement date to 70. There's a number of things that happen, but that's five more years. Number one, that you're working in five more years that you're not drawing down your assets. And the statistics, at least from the latest census data, point to a trend away from early retirement. Early retirement being age between 62 and 65. For example, for men, working beyond age 65 in 1990, 16.3% of men were working beyond 65. By 2010, that statistic had increased to 22%. And by 2018, this year, it's projected that statistic will be close to 27%. The same trend is happening with women. In fact, it's doubling. In 1990, 8.6% of women were working over age 65. By 2010, it was 13.8%. And this year, it's expected to hit 19%. So the trend away from early retirement is becoming more a reality in more of a new paradigm than the old 62-65 I retire paradigm that was with us for so many decades.
Yeah, what is behind this trend, Jim?
You know, there were a number of changes in the laws on early retirement. One came in 1983, and then also another one in the year 2000. The one in 2000 was the one that said, hey, once you reach full retirement age, you can work and still get your Social Security benefits. And then they also changed the mandatory retirement age in 1978 from 65 to age 70. The other thing that we've talked about here so often is more and more companies, at least in the private sector, went away from what we call defined benefit pension plans, where you got a certain percentage of your salary, and they went to what is called defined contribution plans. Commonly, most people probably know these as 401k programs. The other thing, too, especially during the 80s and 90s, it was an age where a lot of boomers spent a lot of money. In the 90s, the stock market was going up, so the savings rate declined. And quite honestly, John, two bear markets, severe ones, both in the year 2000 and also more severe in the year 2007 to 2009, when you lost almost 58% in the S&P 500. So within a decade, you had two bear markets where stocks fell more than 50%. And of course, if you lose half your assets, think of what that does to your retirement.
So all of these trends are generally converging, and they really affect when you decide to retire. That's really the critical decision that you're aiming for. It's almost like an equation on both sides.
It's a critical decision. I mean, you think about it. When you decide to retire, it impacts your Social Security because, you know, when you retire, most people start drawing on their Social Security. Number two, when you retire, is also going to affect your drawdown. In other words, how much of your assets are you going to end up spending? Obviously, the later you do that, the less you're going to draw on your assets. The other thing, too, is if you're not retired, you're better able to ride out a financial storm or a correction. And we've had several, even though we're still in the bull market. Think of what happened to the markets in 2011. Think of what happened, the flash crash, or even 2016, where the first 6 weeks of the year is the stock market went down every single week until the Fed actually backed off in terms of the amount of Fed rate hikes they were projecting. And also, when you retire, can affect your spouse. Some people retire early. Obviously, that's going to impact when you take your Social Security, which also impacts your wife. Or you may be at work, for example, if you retire before age 65, well, then you're going to have to get private medical insurance because you don't qualify for Medicare until you reach age 65. So all of these things are going to impact you. And of course, obviously, the younger that you retire, and especially if you keep yourself in good shape, you know, longevity comes into the picture. So before you make that decision, you really need to ask yourself, number one, can I really afford to retire? Number two, is this the right time to retire? Imagine if you retired in 2008 in the middle of the worst financial crisis. Number three, if you retire, how is this going to impact your spouse? And number four, this is just a personal question. Do you really want to retire? What if you're in a profession that you really enjoy going to work? Look at Warren Buffett. He's in his 80s and he loves going to work and it keeps you healthy. So you need to ask yourself, do I want to retire? And ask those questions. Can I afford it? Is it the right time? How does it impact my spouse? And do I really want to retire?
Jim, you mentioned four things in there. Let's see if we can split those out and look at them more intensely. And, well, maybe the most obvious one is, can I afford to retire? That's a good starting question.
Yeah, because when you retire, unfortunately, the bills come every month. And most will keep coming throughout your retirement. And, you know, things like automobiles, furnace, roof, house repairs, they will continue. You know, when you're working, you have the money to pay for that. And the other thing is, you know, things like Medicare doesn't cover eye care, dental, things like that. Those are going to be out-of-pocket medical expenses. And for the person, you know, contemplating retirement, the resources, I mean, you really have to take a look at, and especially, do you not only have enough assets, but are your assets positioned correctly to get you through retirement? One of the things that we have seen over and over, at least in our practice over the last 7 or 8 years, a lot of people were all in bond funds or in cash, and they didn't have inflation hedges. And you know what, folks? Even though inflation has been moderate over the last couple of years, it's not going away, and it's more likely to increase in the future. So can you afford to retire? And taking a look at all the things that you have, you may want to consider some options. And we're going to talk about some of those options that can help you get yourself in a situation where you feel very comfortable that if you live long, you're not going to run into a situation where you run out of money.
Yeah, timing's always critical too, because, well, it's critical for a lot of things in life. So timing your retirement's also important.
It is, John, because, I mean, let's say you're working and you're working in the year's 2007. The markets are getting choppy. 2008, we're in a financial crisis. Would you want to retire at a time your assets are going down in a time like that? Or, you know, something that happens to many people, and it happened to a lot of individuals in 2008 and 2009. You're planning on working to age 66 or 67, whatever your original plan is, and all of a sudden the company goes through downsizing. They get bought out. The new company comes in and they start laying off people, or you get into a recession and the company starts cutting back. So all of a sudden you're thrown into a situation you're not prepared for, and you didn't plan for it. You know, your plan was to work to age 67. However, you're age 60 and you just got laid off. What do you do? And this brings up another important question, especially for individuals that get laid off before age 65, when you can qualify for Medicare, is what about medical expenses? You know, with the company, you had a medical plan, or you had, let's say, medical benefits as part of your compensation package. What happens now? You're not with that company. Either you wanted to retire early. Another reason you may want to retire early, or it may not work out right, for health issues. We've had several cases where, because of the stress of work, commuting and traveling and things like that, where my client had to retire for medical reasons to preserve the health. And so you have to think of the impact on the family. And then, John, I think a big one is, do you want to retire? If you are doing something that you enjoy your work, you enjoy the people you work with, you love your job, you love what you do, you get gratification from it, do you really want to retire? Just because you're a certain age doesn't mean you have to. So those are some big questions. And the greatest challenge facing anyone who attempts to retire early is, and this is the real big risk, there are going to be fewer years to accumulate assets. And number two, more years you're going to have to finance through your retirement. So given time and age, it becomes a big issue. And that's one of the things that people are groping with. You know, they might have started out with a plan that was looking pretty good when they first retired, but then all of a sudden, medical issues, inflation come into play, and all of a sudden, things aren't as rosy as they once were.
Okay, so say we want to avoid this whole scenario where you run out of money and go broke in retirement. There must be some type of a plan you can have in order to help you avoid doing that.
Well, there are a number of things. Number one, the easiest thing is simply to delay retirement. By delaying retirement, number one, you've got more years to accumulate assets. Number two, it means you're going to draw down less assets because you're living off your salary, your income. You're not touching your assets like your 401k program or other things like that, or even personal investments. You allow them to accumulate. Another option is to work part-time. A third is to downsize. And another one, John, that I predict we're going to see more and more, especially in the blue states that have high taxes, high cost of living, is relocate. And what we have found to be a very effective option is not only to downsize, but you downsize, let's say you live in a very expensive area of the country, New York, New Jersey, along the coast, or here in California, you downsize, sell the big house, but you also relocate to another part of the country where there's no taxes, low taxes, and the cost of living for just about everything is much cheaper. Another option to choose, and some companies will offer this, not all companies do, but you have money in a 401k program or a company pension plan. Instead of taking, let's say, a rollover, you take the lump sum, you roll it over into an IRA and you invest it. Some companies offer you annuitization, meaning that instead of taking it in a lump sum, we will give you a lifetime annuity on your life or that of your spouse. And quite honestly, I've had a number of cases where the annuity option was the better option for the client rather than rolling it over and trying to, let's say, make an adequate return to replace what the annuity option is. And we have clients that we've taken assets and we've actually annuitized them because there just simply wasn't enough assets in this low return environment to enable the individual to retire. And number six, having an income inflation hedge. Because I can tell you, whatever you're spending money on today, I don't care if it's medical, whatever that option is, you are going to be spending much, much more 10 years from now, 15, 20, or even 25 years from now.
Sounds, Jim, like there are really a number of options to avoid getting into that position. And probably, I'm going to guess, it's going to be a combination of them wisely planned that will keep you out of it.
There is, John. And let's talk about number one, delaying retirement. And this makes more sense today with people living longer and also the advantages that you get by having more years to accumulate, because one of the issues that they talked about in the census, a lot of people just simply aren't prepared for retirement. They haven't saved enough. So by delaying retirement, if you're putting money aside, you're going to have more money to basically draw down because you're going to allow it to accumulate. And going along with that, there's fewer years to finance. I mean, the average couple lives 25 years at age 65. Well, you're going to have to finance 25 years. If you retire at age 70, well, you cut that down to 20 years. And so you cut down, you're not only accumulating more, but you're going to spend less. The other thing, too, is if you can postpone taking your Social Security, it's going to do a number of things. From full retirement age to age 70, it's going to grow at 8% a year. So if you take it at age 70, you're going to get a check that's 32% bigger than where you are today. And secondly, it's also going to help your wife, who more likely will end up being the survivor, because when you die, she's going to lose her Social Security because she'll pick yours because it's larger, but she'll lose hers. If yours is larger, she's going to be better off. And the other thing, too, by delaying retirement, you're going to be less nervous if the market corrects 10, 15, or 20%, or if you get into a bear market. When you're in a bear market and you're drawing down your assets and you're seeing those assets go down 20% a year, it's going to make you nervous and it could severely impact you and put you in a position where later on you do run out of money. So delaying retirement goes a long way to putting you in a more secure position. You're saving more, you're spending less, and you're better able to ride out a bear market.
You know, the one that I tend to like, because I hate being bored. As soon as I get bored, I go find something to do that's productive. And working part-time, that seems to be something a lot of people are choosing to do. And they're happy doing it. It gives them purpose.
It gives them purpose. They tend to live longer because they have, as you mentioned, purpose. This seems, John, of all the options that we're talking about, this seems to bridge the gap the most for a lot of people that retire, because the extra income, you know, I have a case that I think we did this case on the show last year. He was a doctor. He wanted to have X amount of dollars when he retired. He basically wanted to have over $100,000 when he retired, and he wanted to have $1 million. Now, when he was a client, first became a client in 1985, you got to remember we were getting 13 and 14% on interest rates and at the bank and on CDs. And so $1 million back in 1985 would have produced the income that he was earning as a salary. Well, by the time he came to retirement, we had more than that. We had over several million dollars. His goal was, and this is the inflation factor, it would take $3 million to produce what we could have earned on $1 million back in 1985. So that just goes to show you, you know, lower returns, lower interest rates, how that can affect an individual's retirement objectives. And so the bridge to gap, he decided to work part-time from age 65 to age 70, and we went well beyond the $3 million. Of course, a bull market helps too. But we were able to allow his existing assets to accumulate. He didn't touch them, and what he made part-time, he could live very comfortably. His house was paid for, so he didn't have that expense. And of course, he was on Medicare. So by working part-time, that really allowed his assets to accumulate. It allowed him also to allow his Social Security to grow by, you know, 8% a year. And so his Social Security, when he took it at age 70, when he did retire, was 32% larger. So he is in great shape today, and all of that done simply with part-time work. And John, this was a doctor. He saved money. He had a good portfolio. Anybody going into retirement with $2.5 million would certainly think you'd be better off. But the things he wanted to do, he has two children who are married, two daughters that are married to individuals that work overseas. And so he wanted to be able to take trips. And of course, big trips, I don't need to tell you, if you're gone 2 or 3 weeks overseas, travel, hotel, it runs into money.
Downsizing and relocation are always two important considerations because, you know, typically you have a big house when you have a big family. And when you're in retirement, the kids have, for the most part, although that's changing with millennials, a lot of them have moved out. You don't need the size that you had before. So why support it?
You know, I want to combine downsizing with relocation, because downsizing, number one, you know, as you mentioned, a lot of people have a big home. They don't need it anymore. They have a lot of equity that's tied into the house. So it enables them, number one, to, let's say, if they have a mortgage with a lot of equity, if they downsize, they may be able to pay cash for a house. Or they buy a smaller house, pay cash for it, and it frees up extra money they can add to their portfolio. It reduces expenses. Obviously, a larger home is more expensive to run than a smaller home. But I find it's more effective when you do it with relocation, because, you know, especially when you live in these high cost of living states, high tax states, when you relocate to a lower cost of living state, Nevada, Arizona, Texas, Florida, wherever it is that you're going, number one, you're going to get housing. Is going to be so much cheaper, especially if you live along the coast. Number two, you may move to a state with lower taxes or no taxes. You know, think of Nevada, think of Texas, think of Florida or Tennessee, some of these states. And so by combining them, you're not only moving to a place where the cost of living is cheaper, so you're reducing your expenses. This is something you have control over. And it's also, you may, in many cases, get rid of your taxes, because housing, medical, and taxes are the three biggies in retirement. So if you can move to a place where you buy a home that's much cheaper, the cost of living is much cheaper, gasoline, food, everything else, utilities is cheaper, then guess what? Your expenses are lower, so your money's going to go further. It's a very effective, I think those two are a good combination.
Now let's come down and talk about inflation, hedging against it, and how that relates to annuities.
One of the options, and this is not with all companies, you might probably more likely to see this in a Fortune 500, S&P 500 company, where they have some kind of pension profit sharing, and then they have something like a 401k program. But some of these companies will have an annuity option. So instead of taking your money in a lump sum, you basically have an annuity option that's going to give you a monthly check that you can never outlive, which is the great thing about annuities. They're often maligned for the wrong reasons. But, you know, when we had defined benefit pension plans, all defined benefit pension plans are simply annuities. We've had annuities in existence for 600-700 years. In fact, they were one of the early forms of financing in the Middle Ages. So, you know, a lot of times you're better off taking the annuity option from the company, because you know that check will never end. It'll always be there. And it'll always be there for your surviving spouse, depending on the option. So the annuity option sometimes makes a lot of sense, and sometimes you just don't have enough assets. So you might have to take a lump sum of your assets and annuitize them, because what are you going to do? You're going to draw down your assets one way or another. And sometimes by annuitizing, you can defer the longevity risk to the insurance company rather than bearing the burden all by yourself. And then finally, I think something that's really, I think the case of the doctor is a good example. He wanted to have $1 million. It took $3 million when he finally retired to buy and give him the income that he wanted to have in retirement. And that's having an income inflation hedge. Now, they say senior cost of living is going up at about 6% a year. And that mainly takes place in the latter years when you're hit with these medical expenses. But for example, at a 6% cost of living, if you're spending $4,000 a month, you're going to need $7,000 in 10 years, $13,000 in 20, and $17,000 in 25. Now, let's half that to 3%. With a 3% cost of living, $4,000 a month in 10 years, you're going to need $5,400 a month to buy the same goods and services. Almost $7,200 in 20 years and $8,400 in 25 years. And you think about it, in those 25 years, it may be in those last 5 years where you're living in assisted care, and you know what that cost, and especially if you live in a state like California or New York. So unfortunately, John, a lot of retirees, this is something we've seen probably more so as a result of the last financial crisis, mainly have their assets in fixed income. So you need to ask yourself, if you're all in bonds or bond funds, well, if you're in bond funds, you've probably seen your income decline over the last 8 years as interest rates have come down. And if you're in bond funds, You have to ask yourself, outside of the meager increase in your Social Security, what is going to pay for those higher cost of living items that you'll need or your lifestyle 5, 10, 15, or 20 years from now?
So as we talk about putting all of these together, because as we've said, based on your circumstances, you want to optimize all of this, you do need to plan for retirement. You plan when you're going to retire. You may want to consider working part-time. It gives you fulfillment as well as keeping an extra source of cash moving in. Downsizing both your spending and some of your living arrangements. Relocating to a cheaper place. There are cheaper places in the country to live. You should also consider annuitizing pensions or assets, especially having an inflation hedge, because there is a day when it's going to come back stronger than it is now. And to put all this together, you always come back to that one fundamental idea that you need a plan to distribute how you're going to implement all of this in a coordinated effort.
And John, I would say it's not just have a plan. You also have to have a plan B, because things change. Health changes. The markets change. Investments change. And then you also have to have a plan when there's just one of you, because you may be going along, but all of a sudden one of you passes away. You just lost a Social Security check. How will that impact you? And this is one of the things that we always try to work into our plans, is how a couple will be impacted if one of them passes on, because you're definitely going to lose one Social Security check. And that's why I think that you really, when you want to find yourself in a situation where you don't run out of money, the best way to do that is make sure you have a backup plan or plan B when there's just one of you.
Coming up tomorrow, our guest on the program is Paul Horn from Financial Sense Wealth Advisors, real estate and how real estate investing is impacted by the new tax bill, now that we have a solid bill that we can actually look at rather than speculate about. Time for our real life case study to illustrate those points that Jim has been making right now. This is an hypothetical illustration based on real life examples, and names and circumstances of individuals have been changed. And as always, we do have PowerPoint slides online at financialsense.com, which illustrate the points which Jim is making here.
The case this week is Brian and Lucy Withers. Brian is age 65. Lucy's age 54. They both want to retire within 1 or 2 years. The big difference here, Brian's life expectancy is 86. Lucy's 95. So we now only have almost 11-year age difference between the two of them, but life expectancy is much greater on Lucy's side. Her parents lived well into their 90s. Their risk tolerance, like many people their age, is moderate. They want income with capital preservation. Basically, Brian is a private contractor. He's worked as a private contractor his entire life. He loves it, but he's considering retiring, given that he has seen many buyouts and is involved in another. Retiring soon is an appealing proposition, since he desires to spend a lot more time with his friends, family, and he's living very comfortable. Now, I can relate to this, and he loves to have more time for sailing and golf. Brian, I could relate so much to sailing. Brian cares not to change his lifestyle too much. However, he has a heart condition and has already had bypass surgery that could potentially require additional procedures in the future. After some major investment losses, he decided to use an investment advisor because he tends to be a little bit overzealous when it comes to taking risk. Lucy, on the other hand, has worked in the same fine dining restaurant for nearly 2 decades, has built up a network of many lifelong friends and clients throughout the years. Although she enjoys what she does, she's finding her job more difficult due to her worsening arthritis. She's very healthy and has been given a long life expectancy, given her mother is still alive in her late 90s, and grandparents both reach age 100. So this is something that we're seeing more often, John, is people living to be centenarians. So because of this, she's more conservative when it comes to investing. Now, on the risk score, they scored a 3. Unfortunately, their portfolio was a 7, and they went through some dramatic downturns early on with the bursting of the tech bubble and, of course, the financial crisis in 2007 and 2009. And when you're investing aggressively, well, guess what? You can lose a lot of money, which is what happened. Now, what was important to both of them? They wanted to retire. Obviously, health was becoming an issue. They wanted to preserve their purchasing power, but they wanted to maintain their lifestyle, and they were concerned about medical risk, especially Brian, because he may have to undergo surgery unless he could correct his health through diet, which is one thing his doctor suggested. And one of the things that he had learned from listening to Lifetime Income with a lot of the experts that we've had here on the program. Their essential budget was close to $100,000. Discretionary was close to $50,000. So let's round it off and say it was $150,000. Their income was over $150,000 a year. Their surplus was basically $67,000. So Brian's salary was $151,000. Lucy's was $62,000. So they had plenty of income and were managing to save. But once again, they had lost money. Now, if they retired, they figured they could reduce their essential budget down to roughly under $60,000 a year, discretionary $50,000. A lot of that had to do with golf membership cost of maintaining a sailboat, and also marina fees. All of that stuff is expensive. Social Security would be $48,000, a shortfall of $57,000. Their primary residence was basically $665,000, free and clear. About the only thing left in liabilities was $50,000 on Brian's sailboat. Brian's retirement assets were about $1.5 million. Lucy's about $1.25 million. Their joint accounts close to $1 million. So total assets of about $3.2 million. Their concern overall, and especially you can imagine somebody that lost a lot of money in the downturn, was having sufficient cash to maintain the standard of living and the risk of longevity. And that is especially running on Lucy's side with her mother still alive, the 11 years difference between her and Brian. So the other thing was what we call sequence of risk returns, because sooner or later, we're going to have another bear market. We're going to have a recession. And they did not, especially Lucy, and I think more so today, Brian, want to go through another downturn in the markets like they did and experienced between 2007 and 2009. So what we did is we put them in a balanced account, conservative blue chip companies, and a fixed income bond portfolio with laddered bonds. So as interest rates rose, and we also had interest rate floaters in there, so as rates went up, they could reinvest maturing bonds at a higher interest rate. And then also with floating rate bonds, as interest rates went up, their income would go up. That would produce roughly about $73,000 of income, giving them about $121,000, a surplus roughly of about $15,000. We recommended that Brian continue to work for 18 to 24 months to help increase the retirement nest egg so that he would be able to take his full Social Security benefits at age 66. We also encouraged him to sign up for Medicare Advantage to keep their costs somewhat predictable. We also suggested they follow their doctor's advice to take better care of themselves, since prevention is probably the best medicine. And one of the things that I had Brian read a couple books, and he's moving more towards a vegetarian, vegan type lifestyle, because that would reduce a lot of the cholesterol and a lot of the problems that he had. So health and diet was going to be a big part of his plan. And for Lucy, we advised that Brian delay retirement on Social Security benefits to increase cash flow, because they had an excess. So if he delayed taking his benefits to age 70, number one, it was going to be 32% bigger. But given the age difference and health difference, Lucy was more likely to be the survivor. So therefore, her retirement check from Social Security would be much larger versus, let's say, Brian taking it much earlier. So that, in a nutshell, John, was the plan. And in this case, part of the plan was really a major lifestyle change for him in terms of diet. He never watched his diet. And since going on this diet, he's not only lost weight, but he's happy to say his cholesterol is coming down along with his weight, along with blood pressure. So he's in a better health position overall.
And tomorrow on the program again, Paul Horn from Financial Sense Wealth Advisors, real estate and how it is impacted by the new tax bill that's on lifetime income tomorrow. We're still at the beginning of the year here, Jim. What are we looking towards as we slide down the year?
As we get more and more details, a lot of people are going to be waking up to, number one, they should be getting larger paychecks starting next month for most people. If you're in California, New York, that may not happen because you're losing a lot of your itemized deductions. So we're going to be talking about planning, whether it's small, closely held businesses, subchapter S businesses, and, you know, tax planning under this new tax law, because this is really big. We haven't had anything major of this scope in over three decades, and a lot of things are coming out. This is going to impact the way companies finance. It's going to impact buying new homes. There's all kinds of things that are in this bill that people really need to familiarize themselves. You know, the good news for a lot of you seniors who are getting ready to retire, this tax bill is good news. It's going to lower your taxes overall. So, but we're going to be talking about that in the months ahead, especially as we head into tax season on April 15th. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until we talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertised with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.